Hello, 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 everybody.
Howdy ho.
Ahoy, hoy.
This is episode 49 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
You know what that means?
That means we're coming up on episode 50. next week's our big live show. It should be pretty exciting.
It will definitely be different.
There are at least going to be 16 people here, including us.
Mm-hmm. Woo, nice. Yeah. 17. Lucky 13 guests.
Yeah,
it's just up to 17 now.
Is it up to 17?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a U2 concert.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so as always, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and you can check out our Facebook page. It's on Facebook. You'll be able to find it. And you can tweet. Jared, you're in charge of the tweets.
Yep.
What's that Twitter address?
All right, so go on Twitter and search for at Big Planet Comics.
That's all English letters.
All together.
The alphanumeric. Just keep it alphanumeric,
about those
people.
Tricky spaces.
Yeah.
It's not old English. There's not any extra E's. Or...
Nope. No umlauts.
Biggie Planet Comics.
Yeah, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
How's the Twitter been going?
It's been going all right. Got some tweets.
A Twitter.
A twit or two.
Everybody's a Twitter over our Twitter.
Indeed.
Yeah, okay. All right. So yeah, so next week the big live thing.
Yeah, so you can, if you're feeling like it, please let us know if you're coming. We do have a Facebook invite set up. You just go to Big Planet's page on Facebook. And invite your friends. The cool ones.
Yeah, don't invite everybody you know.
Yeah, just the cool friends.
Don't invite 700 people.
Yeah.
Because they won't fit in here.
Nope.
I think we're trying to figure out special stuff to do. It's kind of just going to be a regular old podcast, but we're going to have, if you're coming, try to prepare a question, because we're going to have an extended Q&A session.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there might be, I'm thinking about playing the reviews jingle live.
Yep, there may be, musical performances.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
At least just one. and maybe I'll try to write something else before then, too.
Sweet.
But, yeah, indeed. So, yeah, try to come down if you can. Also, we have a couple other events coming up. Well, really, just one. I guess we have our 4th of July sale. Do you guys know when that's going to be?
I think it's like somewhere in July.
Oh, probably.
Early July.
The 4th? Let's just say it's going to be on the 4th. The subject to change.
Yeah.
do we have shortened hours that day?
We will be open 12 to 5-ish. We might be a little closing a little bit early if we get really lazy. But if you guys show up, we'll stay open for you.
Chances are we're going to be lazy.
Yeah.
We are... lazy.
Yeah.
Come get some comics before you go eat barbecue or whatever.
Did we say everything's gonna be 20% off?
Most likely. There may be additional gimmicks and promotions, so stop by. There'll be some exciting stuff.
You know what we haven't said?
What's that?
Who we are.
We're the Big Planet Comics Podcast.
No.
Oh.
Well, yes, that is true. But my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
That's what we usually do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all right, so what's been going on with you guys besides all the stuff I just said?
Oh, thanks for asking, Kevin.
No
That's
problem.
That's pretty cool.
Jared Smith.
Thank you, Kevin Panetta. I went to the zoo and the Air and Space Museum with my friends and their 5-year-old son, who is like puts a whole new spin on going to fun activities like that. It's a lot more exciting when you're chasing a child around. And we also went to Artomatic, the cool art exhibit down in Crystal City, which is going on through this weekend. So if you haven't gone, check it out.
Cool. What about you, Nick? What have you been doing?
It's pretty crazy coincidence, because I went to an Air and Space Zoo Museum.
Really? What did you see?
No. Pterodactyls.
Some kind of flying microbes.
Yeah. What have you been doing?
What have I been doing? Nothing. I never do anything.
Yeah, it seems that way. Usually you do things, but the last couple podcasts, you're like, I don't do anything.
I know something. Wasn't there a house divided in a certain Greece versus Russia soccer game?
Oh, yeah. I did watch the... Greece versus Russia soccer game with my girlfriend who's Russian.
Oh, terrible.
Which was pretty sweet because Greece won.
And Nick is Greek, in case you guys didn't know.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw you posted on her Facebook page, like, Greece wins in Russian.
Yep.
Yeah.
And double slap to the face.
And she posted in Greek on your Facebook page to get a new girlfriend. So.
Yeah. Her cousin said he's not coming to our wedding.
So I've just been playing Catan, like, all the time.
Chirp, chirp, chirp. There you go.
You know, it's really... Woo! I love it, though. I love it so much. I'm going to play it tonight again, actually.
How many people are you playing with?
Just 3.
Yeah, because that really changes depending on how many players you got in it, which I think is kind of cool.
It's fun with 3. I pulled a really dick move in the last game.
Well done.
Yeah, so...
So now you're playing with 2 or 1.
I'm pretty proud of that. And then I'm going to go see a bunch of punk bands on Saturday, so I'm excited. Insubordination Fest. I'm going to go see Mean Jeans. They're one of my favorite bands, so...
Insubordination Fest.
We're all gonna be very insubordinate. Well, Mean Jeans are playing, Dear Landlord's playing, Houseboat, all these bands that everybody I'm sure knows.
They are some of my favorites I've never heard of.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to Mean Jeans Burgers?
Is like Mean Gene Okerlund?
Nope.
I know that he has a burger.
When I was in college, he opened one up in our college campus, and he was there. It was pretty crazy. I was like, "It's Mean Gene."
I haven't been to that, but I have been to Kenny Rogers' Chicken.
Was Kenny Rogers there though?
He was not. I don't think he was there. I mean, he might have been in the back.
He was in the kitchen.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the exciting thing that I've been doing for my entire life is just going to Kenny Rogers' Chicken one time
every day.
Nice. Yeah.
All right. So that's enough about us.
Oh,
we should do. What should we do? Oh, well, we do viewer mail, don't we? Isn't that what we do next?
We can do it.
Let's do it.
The X-Men arrive.
Yeah.
Such good music for that.
All right. So here's an email from John from Arlington.
Man, I like that people are putting their place names there. It's good.
Yeah. He says, Planeteers. Is that a word thing?
It is.
It is definitely.
You are a Planeteer by emailing us.
So it seems like he was writing this email as he was listening to the podcast. So here it goes.
Even better.
He goes, what's your response on the cancellations of the DC books? Oops, I'm listening to your podcast right now, and you just talked about this. But he says he really liked Resurrection Man, and he's sad to see it go. Wait, is it getting canceled? Yes, it is. So I guess he was like literally like we just started talking about it, but we hadn't said the books that were canceled yet. In memoriam, if you were Resurrection Man, what power would you like to be resurrected with? It says here, Kevin, your answer can't be awesome sound effects. And then he wrote, pop, 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 pow.
Pop, pop.
If you can't think of this is a good community reference. If you can't think of a power, which DC book would you like to see Resurrection Man in a crossover storyline? Personally, I would like to see Scott Snyder's take on the character, mostly because I think he's an awesome writer. That's the thing. I'd like to see Scott Snyder's take on any character because he's Scott Snyder and he, you know, does good stuff.
I think Jeff Lemire would also do a great job because he's also a great writer.
So
I think if I was Resurrection Man, I would like to come back with the power to never die again. It seems like his thing is that he keeps getting killed in terrible ways.
So immortality. And then your book.
But not just immortality, just like never being able to die.
So you'd just be like mangled and crippled.
No, like nothing would hurt you.
Invulnerable and immortal.
That's two powers. You only got one.
No, that's fine. All right.
It's a combo.
True immortality.
Yeah.
What about you, Jared?
I'd come back with awesome rap skills.
Would you?
Yeah, man.
You don't already have those?
Not as good as you know, what if it came
do
back.
Wanna, do you want to try to freestyle right now if I lay down a B for you?
Sure. What do you got? What's my topic, yo? Wow, this is really slow.
Right. Nobody wants to hear that.
No, I had it. It was coming. It's all did about you ever, Resurrection Man.
Did it start out like, my name is Jared and I'm here to say?
Oh, man. I love Fruity Pebbles in a crazy way.
He loves Fruity Pebbles in a major way. That's the greatest rap song of all time, by the way.
Is.
And it's, I think, the first rap song because it's from like the Neolithic age or something.
Nice.
Anyway, so I guess if I could have a power, I would just go with the regular one. Like I think invisibility or actually being able to teleport anywhere in the world is always my go-to power. Because I don't really want to be a crime fighter.
Oh, man.
But I'd love to be able to just like go to Spain.
I'm going
to
have lunch in Tokyo today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or like
super speed. That'd be pretty good because you could do that and you could do other stuff.
Actually, I think I would change mine
to
mental resilience so I could get over the fact that I just died. That would probably mess me up pretty bad.
So Jared would want the power to get free therapy.
Yeah.
He says there's a postscript here.
Oh, go on.
Which is what PS stands for, in case anybody was wondering. Any chance I can get details on your live podcast number 50? And is your Vienna store near the metro? It's terribly close to the metro. But if you look us up online, you can get a Google map. But there are buses.
Yes, and we are always in between the Dunloring and Vienna metro stops on the Orange Line. And there's a bus line that runs from one to the other. So if you get on the right bus, it will just take you right down the road that we're on.
I would recommend going to Vienna just because there are always more cabs and buses there.
Yep.
And he says, thanks for turning me on to Rachel Rising and Animal Man. Those books are awesome.
You're welcome.
That's true.
Nice. They are awesome.
You are welcome.
Didn't you have another part of that question? Something about Resurrection Man coming back in a team up?
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. What crossover storyline would you like to see Resurrection Man in?
I think he'd do well in the new Justice League Dark.
I agree. That's what I was going to say.
Well, now I got to think of a different one.
No. I think that's good. I think.
I got it.
What is it?
Wonder Woman, just to see how Hades would deal with him. Eh? Messing with the realm of the dead.
Did you guys read the new issue of Wonder Woman? It was really good.
No, not yet.
It was awesome.
I would like to some kind of Constantine Resurrection Man team up. Would be pretty sweet.
You mean like in Justice League Dark?
I guess or in Hellblazer.
Yeah. It's weird that like Hellblazer exists and Justice League Dark exists, but those are different characters?
No, they're the same. Just Hellblazer is a solo book, and Justice League Dark is a team book.
But Hellblazer is a Vertigo series.
It'll be okay.
Yeah, it's all right. I guess I shouldn't think about it too
hard. It's like, how can Wolverine be in 8 books at once? Don't think about it.
We also got an email from a guy named AJ, and we're trying to figure out the answer to that one, so we might have to do that one on our 51st episode.
Yep, there's research involved. There's debate about it.
So. Yeah, so AJ, we didn't forget you, buddy.
Yeah, we'll get back to you.
Yeah. And also, we got a tweet from Matt Starchak, a guy who sent in an email last week, and we were wondering what a P1 listener was. And he very kindly told us. He says, a P1 listener is a loyal fan to a radio show or podcast. I think it is an Arbitron rating term.
Makes sense.
Thanks for playing that sweet air horn. No problem. If you can let us know what an Arbitron rating term is in another tweet, that would be great as well.
Yes.
And if anybody else has any questions, you can send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Or you can call the podcast hotline at 1-703-539-CAST.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Somebody asked me, what was that number again?
That
was 1-703-539-CAST. Uh-huh. Or you can send us a tweet or do there are ways.
Yeah, post on the Facebook.
Just find us.
Whatever. Send us a letter.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
To 426. I'm not going to actually read our address on the
also on the web page
for some reason, but it is on the web page. So that's it for questions this week. Like I said, if you guys are coming to the live thing next week, you should come questions in
come questions hand.
Blazing.
Blazing.
Questions in mouth.
Nope.
Get your mouth ready to ask us some questions. that's our new slogan. Get your mouth
new
ready.
New tagline.
All right. So you guys want to review some books?
Yes.
Let's do it. Oh, that's the wrong one. Let's do it.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, so up first we have Astonishing X-Men number 51 by Marjorie Liu and Mike Perkins. Some people may know already why we are reviewing this book, but if they do not...
I feel like everybody does.
Well, some people don't, so tell them.
Okay.
That's why we're here.
Well, this has been Marvel's publicized event. They went on The View and announced that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that North Star was going to get married. It'll be the first gay wedding in a comic.
The View's okay, but I like it's the fake true. View, like the one that has Julie Chen and Darlene from Roseanne on it.
All right.
The Talk, I think it's called.
Yeah, God.
That one's much better. That's the
worst.
Anyway, go.
It's Julie Chen is the worst.
Julie Chen is the worst. Anyway.
Yeah, and so this is the issue where North Star gets married. It's kind of weird because it's actually the end of a storyline that's been going on for a few issues. So if somebody's just coming into this like for the wedding, they might be confused as to what's going on.
The non-wedding stuff is
weird. It starts in the middle of the story, and but all the wedding stuff is done pretty well. It's very romantic, and
as it
can be in an X-Men comic, you know.
Yeah,
and. I don't know. Everything in it is really good. I feel like this Astonishing X-Men has become kind of the X-Men soap opera book. Not in a bad way, though.
It's more soap opera book.
It's more like about the characters.
It definitely is that.
And there's not like a crazy, you know, thing. They're not in like a huge battle in costumes all the time. It's just kind of a side thing that they do.
Right. I mean, even when this team took over, the first issue was like about a few of them moving into an apartment together, right?
Yeah.
That was definitely like a theme for the X-Men for a long time, was like so much about like the interpersonal relationships. And like, you remember in the 90s when it was like all just about like who was hooking up with who? Like, it was completely ridiculous. And this is like toned down, but there's good drama.
There's still a lot of cool like comic booky subplots going on. And actually, something I forgot that somebody pointed out is that Karma is also on this team, and she's also gay. Like, I didn't realize the two of the Astonishing X-Men were gay.
Huh.
But, and so they said that, you know, something, she's going to have a relationship pretty soon, too.
Yeah, I thought it was tastefully done, and, like, it was interesting to see some of the viewpoints of some of the other characters, but...
I like that, too, actually.
Yeah, they didn't actually hold back at all. There was actually
like, some of the characters were slightly homophobic, or
one of them
extremely
really
homophobic. But overall, I found the whole issue a little bit boring.
Yeah.
But that's just, I wedding issues are never too terribly exciting for me. Usually they tend to get invaded by like a Dr. Octopus or something like
that. Well, they make reference to that.
Yeah,
like,
it's funny they talk about that. Yeah.
The wedding prep's going on. They're like, oh, these never go right. You know, Dr. Doom's going to show up and start blasting or kidnapping people. And they miss the chance to rattle off, you know, that there have been a lot of good, like who's Sue Storm and Mr. Fantastic got married. And that was like one of the first big events in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, Mary Jane and Peter Parker for when I was a kid. That was like the huge one.
Never happened.
I guess it didn't. One of the worst moments in Marvel history is that. Led to some great Spider-Man books, but whole Mephisto thing was...
Boy,
was that a mess.
But yeah, I think a thing I wished more about this was there's some really good behind-the-scenes stuff of, like, you know, people talking during the wedding, like you guys said, and I wanted more of it. Like, there's so many good characters that would show up to this wedding, and they just... A lot of them only get one line or get no screen time.
I feel it would have benefited from, like, a double-size issue.
Yeah.
Just because, like you said, there's, like... Like, all the Alpha Flight members are in it, but they all get, like, one line or, like, a passing...
Oh, and they make a reference to, like, how are we going to seat people at tables? We can't have too many Avengers sitting next to X-Men because they're all angry at you know? And you're like, oh, right, you know? And they could have done some awesome stuff with that, but...
And it might also be, like, I don't know a lot about a bunch of these characters. You know? So I feel like there were probably some little one-off lines that would have been, like, a nice payoff for somebody who, like, maybe knew more about the history
there was
Puck
a few.
Or something
there was
like
a few,
that.
Yeah.
And I just don't really know that stuff. But I thought it was handled better than another recent similar situation.
Right.
And I thought...
It was good. It focused pretty much on the two characters getting married and what, you know, what problems they've been having and how they're going to fix it. And
I liked in the back there was an ad that was like...
That was awesome.
If you want to get married in New York, like, here's the stuff you need to do. I thought that...
It was an ad by the New York wedding agency, basically. Its name I have to look up.
New York.
Is right at the end of the story, and it's the office of the city clerk for the city of New York on if you would like to get married in New York, whether you're gay or not, here's what you got to do.
Yeah, and
it's awesome.
I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah, overall, there was like a thing at the end that was like...
It was a pretty crazy there was like, thing at the end.
Yeah, and that kind of almost didn't fit in this issue, but I guess they want people to read the next issue as well.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
But overall, I thought it was solid. I know that you guys really liked it a lot. That might be a theme of this week.
Yeah.
Or it seems to be becoming the theme of the podcast in general. But there were definitely a couple things that I really liked this week.
I would say this is enjoyable, but not great. But that.
Yeah, and definitely part of the Astonishing X-Men storyline, but a cool moment in comics.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. All right, next up we have Before Watchmen, The Comedian, number 1 of 6. This is going to be the last decent Before Watchmen book for at least 3 or 4 weeks. This is by Brian Azzarello with art by J.G. Jones, and this covers The Comedian in, I guess, 1963, definitely, because of... things
Events.
That happen. And it's kind of a weird story. It definitely was not what I was expecting.
No.
Especially after the introduction of the comedian in the Minutemen thing.
Oh, right.
Where it's more about...
He's young in that, right?
Yeah. And he seems a little more down to earth in this issue than maybe he's been in the other Watchmen material.
In the
he's not like
prequels or...
Well, yeah, in Minutemen and in Watchmen itself, you know, he's not like murdering people with flamethrowers and laughing about it in this.
Kind of.
Well, he's not laughing about doing it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He's not as brutal as.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's not.
But I feel like this will probably kind of.
This is heading in that direction.
Yeah. But yeah. Oh yeah, I'm sure it will be. But this is this kind of focuses on his relationship with John and Bobby Kennedy.
All the
Kennedy family.
Yeah.
And Jackie.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And Marilyn Monroe.
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really strange. It starts off with him like in playing is he playing football? I can't remember.
Yeah, they're like playing touch
football.
Football
with the two Kennedy boys and like Teddy and
it's Teddy and then Bobby's in it later. But it's weird. It really paints the comedian in this kind of like almost loving light.
Yeah,
and it's
there's always references. I think there's references in Watchmen from him like being friends with all these kind of political figures, and I feel like the Kennedys were in Watchmen at some point, or at least one of like JFK was in it at some point.
We all need to read Watchmen.
Yeah, that's a problem. But I don't know. It's cool. It kind of continues the theme at least from Watchmen, where like he's kind of in events throughout history. I just remembered, doesn't he kill JFK in Watchmen?
In the movie, they certainly imply that he is the shooter on the grassy knoll.
Is that just in the movie or is that in the comic?
Yeah,
too?
I'm pretty
just
sure.
In the movie.
Because is that in the stupid thing at the beginning of the Watchmen movie that everybody's
of,
like,
no,
oh, that's
no.
the best part of the movie. It's
no,
like
in the
times somewhere. They are a changing thing, right?
I think it's somewhere in the middle.
Nope. That was kind of the end of that montage they show at the very beginning of the film.
Weird.
So I don't think if it's in the comic, it's not explicit. Anybody listening wants to shoot us an email or Twitter and correct all of our poor memories.
Right. I think I'm gonna try to read Watchmen before the next podcast. We should do a review of Watchmen for episode 50.
Oh, that's a good idea.
We should. All right, so but, yeah, I don't know.
The things I liked about this is it really plays up, like you guys were saying, like the kind of alternate history of the Watchmen universe. Yeah. That it's not just modern times or even, you know, set in the 80s or 60s or whatever it is. This is a divergent timeline where things have gone radically different due to the reality of what superheroes and vigilantes running around would do. And so I thought this was perhaps not the best story of the three we've read so far, but just the most interesting because it was something completely different. And, you know, it's just you didn't know what was going to happen. I think that was what it was.
This seems, and I have no idea where it's going to go after this either.
I feel like this is very much in your Jared like realm wheelhouse. Of stuff that you really tend to like.
My alternate history wheelhouse.
Because it reminded me of maybe the Fury Max thing that came out a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But I thought J.G. Jones's art was maybe not the best.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. I compared to his other stuff, it's definitely not his best stuff.
I heard that I thought he had some kind of problems recently, like some really bad problems where he couldn't draw. Like,
that's what I had heard too, but I don't, but it doesn't seem like, you know, I mean, he's still drawn.
It's definitely not as good though. It's a little off, but it's still pretty good, like for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, like the rest of these Watchmen comics, it's pretty good. It's just when you compare it to the source material, it falls a little short. But these, the next couple weeks might be kind of rough. We've got some books from Straczynski and Len Wein coming up, and those focusing on maybe the characters who are going to be the least interesting. I mean, who wants to read a Dr. Manhattan prequel?
Yeah, I feel like Night Owl might be pretty cool.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think
Straczynski, right, for the most part. Yeah.
I think everybody's waiting for the Rorschach one. That's what people want to see.
Yeah, that one's going to be... Yeah. I think pretty good.
Hopefully.
It better be.
It's Azzarello. You know, he can do the right thing sometimes. So.
Good old Lee Bermejo.
Yeah. So, I mean, a book. Comic. Not bad. Not bad by any stretch of the imagination. Just decent. All right. So, so coming up, though, we got a few things that are pretty cool, especially this next book. This is Marathon. By Boaz Yakin, who I don't know. Do you guys know anything that he's done before?
I do, actually. The things he's worked on is a lot of screenwriting and film
stuff.
And
you're just reading the back of the book.
Jared is just reading.
Importantly, he's written and directed a number of films, including Remember the Titans.
A
classic.
Jared's reading that French flap, finding out all the information. And this has art by Joe Infernari, our more eagle-eared listeners, because eagles have ears. would remember that he drew Mush, which was a book that we talked about in episode 37. I'm gonna say
no, it was more like 30.
That was it. Okay,
I don't know. Long ago.
And this is a cool book. Nick, you're the Greekest.
I'm the resident Greek here.
Why don't you tell people what Marathon is about? Or Jared's the history nerds. So
we can do a combo here.
A doodle. Go for it.
You go first. You tell them what the original story is.
Yeah, that I think.
All
that's
right.
A good idea.
So I believe it's Xerxes. Is this the guy we're dealing with? This is Darius.
No, yeah, this is pre-Xerxes.
All right. So the Persian Empire was one of the biggest empires on the face of the planet, and they had beefs with the Greeks because the Greeks were awesome. And as you may know from the film 300, they had democracy, which made them superior to every other person on the planet. And so he decided to invade Greece, and opposing him was the city of Athens. Mm-hmm. And the democratic citizens got together their like volunteer army to go fight him, and where his army was landing on the beach at Marathon, hence the name Marathon of the book.
Yeah.
And things are kind of worrisome because they need the Spartans to come help them, who are, of course, the most badass warriors based, again, on the movie 300 or the comic. But unfortunately, the Spartans are in the middle of their, like, basically, like, Memorial Day weekend. So they're just like, we're too lazy and we're having barbecues and stuff, so we can't come fight yet. So they send a runner to run across the peninsula south, right? To beg the Spartans to be like, please, you know, put off your religious holidays and come help us fight these guys off. That's the beginning.
Yeah, and then, this is about the main story is about I don't even know
Euclides.
I think in Greece it's like Aeschylus or something like.
Oh,
that.
Oh yeah, I saw that stuff. I'm like,
but,
these names are weird.
He's a messenger who back then they don't have like telephones or, I guess they don't have carrier pigeons or anything, but they just have a guy running from one place to another delivering messages. And this is about his epic, 300-mile
in total. Yeah,
yeah, 300-mile like in total, runs, like message trip back and forth. And that's basically all it's about, but it's pretty interesting. It takes some twists and turns in there. There's a little bit of backstory about him and the old king of Athens, and he killed his family, and now he, you know, he wants, he's coming back with the Persians, and he wants to keep
Greece.
Him out of Athens.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. There's a really cool chase scene that's the main chunk of this, of him trying to get to Athens, being chased by like the Persian army.
Well, and that section is the 26-mile marathon.
Yeah, the 26.2 miles. You wonder why that is the distance of a marathon.
Marathon is the city that he's going to, and then...
Yeah, so the distance from there to Athens is 26.2 miles.
It eventually
miles,
becomes so. What the word marathon that we use now yep. came from.
But basically, the Greek army has... they've left nobody in the city because they've moved their whole
Everybody.
Front of their army.
Yeah.
No military presence, at least. And then they kind of trounce the Persians, and then the Persians divert their forces and decide to attack Athens by sea. And the army is all on foot, the Greek army, so they can't get there in time.
Yeah, they're
so
basically like, we have to evacuate or they're going to be trapped in the city. All the like women and children are going to get killed.
Yeah, so basically they yeah. send, Eucles is how yeah. I would say, but yeah. I don't really know. But they send him on this 26.2 mile run to get there on foot before the other army gets there
yeah,
on
outracing
ship.
Ships. Yeah. And they're also, like, it's him and like nine of the other fastest runners in the Greek army,
yeah.
and or the Athens army, and they're also being chased by like... 30 Persians who are like the fastest guys in that army
yeah,
who are all chasing each other with swords. And
I won't spoil the end of this yeah. true story from, you know, 3,000 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, stuff happens.
It's
and
great.
It's yeah. very exciting. And I feel like Joe Infernari's art is great for it. He has this
it's
style
really
that
awesome.
Almost, I know this is going to sound weird, but kind of reminds me of a cross between Tony Moore and Joe Kubert.
That sounds about right. Yeah, yeah he's awesome. Got kind of like the slightly cartoony faces, but with that Joe Kubert kind of sketchy style. And I don't know. It's
and
all
it works
kinetic.
Really well. I mean, he's able to take like, you know, there were probably 20 characters who you need
yeah,
to know in
characters.
This book. And they're all beardy, burly men. And he manages to make them all stand apart from each other.
Yeah.
And he does a really great job with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and the storytelling with the action and the running is all really
that
well
part's
done.
Awesome. Yeah. There's definitely scenes at the beginning where you're getting all the characters very quickly, and that it took me a while to sort them out.
Yeah, it's a little confusing for
yeah,
the first 10
as you
pages
work through it, you quickly begin. And he does some stuff like Eucles himself has, you know, doesn't have a beard, and like the traitor general has like an awesome scar on his face, you know, so there
yeah.
are some visual clues, and like people are wearing some crazy helmets, so it doesn't help that all the soldiers dress the same either. So work through that. It is a little troublesome, but once you get most of the major characters down, it does really well.
I thought it was maybe a little bit longer than it needed to be. For
yeah.
me personally, I felt like it dragged in a couple spots, but overall, I thought it was a really good graphic novel.
Yeah, it's got a great everything.
It's great.
The ending is great.
Ending's
yeah.
awesome. Yeah,
it feels like a really cool. Like it would make a really awesome movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure it probably will.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah, it could be a 300 prequel. It's got a little young Leonidas
true.
In this.
Oh, yeah, that is. He does show up as the what. Kind of,
he's like the king's
the mouthy prince
son.
Son, yeah, yeah.
And his dad's like, "Shut up, Leonidas."
Yeah, which is awesome.
It's pretty funny.
But yeah, the action scenes I think he did really, really well. Like especially the battle scenes with like, you know, just had that kind of motion with like all the spears pointing at everyone, and
yeah.
like there was cool tactics in the battles. There's several battles in this too. It's
I wish
not just running. So.
I guess one of the things is I wish there was a little more sense of a race against time at the end. Like they don't really switch back to the ships as much, so you don't see that they're kind of.
That's true.
Getting close yeah. to Athens. I think that would have like helped with some of the pacing in the second half of the book. But that's like a small nitpick.
Yeah, it's much more
really
personal,
overall.
Just the guy running versus the guys chasing him.
Yeah, but a very cool book. First, second can be a little all over the map with the stuff they put out.
Yeah.
But I think that this is definitely at least a triple, if not a home run. cool. So, yeah, I don't know if it's our highest recommendation.
Nope.
It's a pretty
book.
High
it's
recommendation,
pretty awesome.
Though. There is a book here today that will get our highest recommendation. All right, next
Ooh.
Up is Mars Attack number 1. This is by John Layman. You guys probably know him as the writer of Chew. And is he writing Godzilla right now?
Yeah, he was. He wrote the one.
Oh, he wrote that awesome Goliaths and
Gangsters. And Goliaths, yeah.
Yeah, and this is art by John McCrea, who I am not usually a huge fan of, but I thought he did a perfectly okay job on this book.
Yeah, he did a fairly decent job. He's really good at drawing the Martians, actually.
Yeah
which
cool.
helps, because
yeah.
that's the main thing. They have to look cool or the whole thing doesn't work.
I think an important thing about this is the history of the cards, which I didn't know, so because they used them in the story of this. So can you like kind of do the background?
I actually have a set of the cards.
Oh, really?
I'm No, they're the original ones, but they're because they reprinted them like a million times.
Most importantly, Nick is wearing a Mars Attacks t-shirt right now.
Yes, I am wearing
So basically, in 1962, Topps released this series of 55 cards, these Mars Attacks cards. And
you had to collect them
all. When you collected them all, they formed a big story.
Huh.
And they had like this great painted art. And
yeah, basically each card had a really cool image of a Mars doing some kind of attacking.
Yeah,
like there's one with giant ants eating people. There's one with like them melting cows or whatever. Wow. It was like really gory and
that's
graphic.
Awesome.
And
yeah, and they were a huge success.
And were they all numbered so you could read the story?
They were numbered
order.
1 through 55. I think there were 54 cards, and then card 55 was a synopsis of the entire story.
And if you want all the cards, just buy 54 copies of this comic because they have 54
somehow
different covers.
Yeah, that is worth mentioning. Actually, they put 54 different covers on these, which I think is kind of cool. It's not like you have to collect them all, but you can kind of flip through and say, "Hey, I want the one that has the giant ants on it, or the one that has, you know, the flaming spaceship." So what they did with this story is they kind of created new cards. Yeah. And told a slightly different story.
Oh, okay. That's what I wasn't sure about.
Yeah, no, the cards that they basically present cards as like chapter headings for each of these, but they are not the same as the original. Because
okay.
I think the original was already told in comic form.
Oh, I bet.
In the Mars Attacks Classics trade
from
paperback
the
that came out this week.
Yeah.
Which actually had art by Charlie Adler, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is supposed to be a sequel. There's not really any mention.
It seems to be its own story. I mean, when the Martians show up, it's very much like nobody has seen them before.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
But the basic plot of this first issue is that Martians are crashing on Earth and people are freaking out and killing them, and
in typical fashion they get found by some like hillbillies out in the middle of nowhere who sell them off to a circus,
which is kind of similar to the beginning of the Mars Attack movie that came out as well.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, also the Attack from Mars pinball game is also incredible if you guys want to play a really good pinball game. But yeah, I mean, then this first issue is pretty basic. Yeah, they sell them to a circus.
It's like funny and kind of awesome at the same time.
Yeah, and the people go all Frankenstein on them, the villagers, and kill a few of them. And then it seems like
there's a lot more Martians.
Yeah, one of them survives and flags the Martian fleet. And that's pretty much the bulk of the first story, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if you liked Mars Attacks the movie, this is definitely something.
Yeah, it's that kind of humor, and it's very dark and violent.
Yeah, the Martians are a little scarier in this than they are in Mars Attacks. They're a little more like funny in Mars Attacks. They're
kind of
goofier. But it's still got that weird craziness and like really intense violence. And
yeah, McCrea's art's not the best. His humans are pretty rough, but his backgrounds and his aliens are really good. There's one guy in here who has like this hairline that just does not exist in nature. It's pretty amazing. But but overall, I really enjoyed this. I was kind of surprised at how much I enjoyed it. I mean, you know, Layman does that. He does that kind of goofy mixed with serious pretty well in Chew. I mean, that's always been one thing about Chew, is that it can make you laugh and then either totally gross you out or be totally serious. Sorry, but here's this dude's hair. Look at that.
That
makes
amazing.
No sense whatsoever. Yeah, yeah. But we should take a picture of that one and put it on the webpage. Yeah,
that's like a perfect if you rotated the face and ears.
Yeah.
Sort of.
But anyway, nobody can see that. So
we'll put a picture.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, I would actually say if you're into like pulp sci-fi 60s, like, you know, Invasion USA or I don't know why I picked that one first, but The Day the Earth Stood Still or the Mars Attacks movie. Yeah, I would say check this out.
Yeah, I had like more problems with it thinking that they were using the original cards because they were in like every four or five pages. So I felt like they were doing it too quickly. Like just they're like throwing in a card. I'm like, why didn't you take a whole issue to tell this awesome card drawing? But now that I know it's just like, here's a cool reference to the old one.
I think that's actually pretty
my
cool.
My whole hope and dream from this is that it's successful enough that they do a Dinosaurs Attack comic.
Yeah, Nick was saying he has.
I have Dinosaurs Attack cards, which were inspired by the Mars Attacks. I might have been the same company that put them out.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was Topps. I mean, they were making
everything
cards.
They're the same thing with like painted images, like numbered with story in the back.
Huh.
And those were just like dinosaurs killing people in different ways.
Nice.
Dinosaurs from outer space.
Aha, of course.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right, yeah. Crazy time.
So that's Mars Attacks #1. Up next, we've got New York Monomore. This is a new Fantagraphics hardcover by Jacques Tardy, and then a couple of the stories in here are co-written with people. I think the main story is done with Benjamin Legrand, and then one of the backup stories, I think there are three backup stories, is Dominique Grange.
Well, that was it.
Grange, is that right?
Grange. Yeah, I guess so. The thing that's interesting in the little bios of the pack, Dominique Grange is his wife.
Oh.
I had no idea. I think those were some of the best written ones in here, I thought.
So the main bulk of this story, of this book, it's four stories altogether, but the majority of this is a story called Cockroach Killer.
Yeah, and Fantagraphics has been putting out a bunch of these Tardy hardcovers, which have been pretty great. I think we talked about the Sniper one, Sniper Line and Shot.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
But yeah, the first story in this is really crazy, really weird. It's not like any of the other Tardy stories. Well, it sort of is, but
it's a little more Kafka-esque, fever dream, existential. Yeah.
Basically, it's about this exterminator who's sent on a job, and it's on the 12th floor. But he goes in the elevator and sees that there's a 13th floor, and he's like, I've never seen a 13th floor in a building. So he pushes the button and gets shot up to the 13th floor and hears something really crazy.
And is Gretchen Mol there?
Yeah. And then he hears something really suspicious, and then it starts driving him kind of crazy. And then he kind of gets weirded out by everybody in the building. And then
just weird things actually start happening.
Yeah, he goes and tells like his coworker, who's like this kind of like a gang leader. And crazy violence and
It's funny because you look at the backgrounds in this, and it looks like, you know, like New York has been destroyed in a blitz.
The '80s, right?
Yeah, it's the Bronx in 1982, and that's actually what it looked like. This definitely had a different feel from the other Tardy books to me.
Yeah, it's super weird too, because like the main guy, the Roach Killer, like starts hallucinating, and like he's constantly assessed that he was adopted by Americans, but that his parents were German, and since this is the '80s, like they were Nazis, or at least not, you know, during the Nazi era of Germany, and he's always thinking about who was his real parents and, you know, what was the influence on them. And
That all kind of culminates in a really strange dream that he has, like almost like a fever dream, it seems. Yeah. And I don't want to say too much about it, because it's kind of everything in it is kind of the end of one of the storylines in a way. But
themes of like filth and insanity, and like he and the other exterminators always wearing red uniforms, and this is a black and white comic, so it's just this really striking weird use of red, and like
it's got almost like a Taxi Driver feel to it in a way, but I'd say like Taxi Driver by way of like the Metamorphosis or something like that.
Yeah. And then
more like The Trial or something.
There's a really weird epilogue in the back.
There is.
I forgot about that.
Which uses like pictures of
New
York.
Yeah, it's kind of Fumetti, but has drawings over top of it. Yeah, it's a really interesting story, but very strange. I mean, if you're just used to like Tardy's war stories or his more straightforward stuff, this might take you by surprise, but I still think it's worth checking out.
It's really good. I loved it, yeah.
But I really like the short stories in the back, too. So two of them were by his wife, written by his wife. One about a guy who's slightly deformed, but he very much resembles one of the Beatles, John Lennon. So it's just like the pressures of, you know, living in New York and everyone at first thinking it's him. Then there's another one about...
Wait, John Lennon was in the Beatles?
Used to.
I thought he just sang Imagine.
And then there's another one that she wrote about a Vietnamese girl who is like attacked and raped by an American soldier in Vietnam, and then immigrates to America with like a clue about who it is to try and get her revenge.
All lighthearted stories.
Yeah. And then another one that Tardy just wrote and drew himself called Manhattan, about a Frenchman who just like one day just kind of says why not and buys a plane ticket from Paris and lands in New York, and then just starts walking around the city and is like going insane and like trying to live the New York life based on what he thinks of in movies. It's crazy.
Thing about this is the stories are all very different, but they're all very much about the city. And
yes.
I guess I should have done my research, but did Tardy live in New York for a time? I don't know if there was an introduction here. I do want to say, like all the other Tardy books that have been coming out, this was translated by Kim Thompson, who's one of the guys that runs Fantagraphics. Yep. And he has been doing an amazing job on these books.
Yeah,
and
the translations. He speaks like a million languages. And
he's really amazing. Yeah. So cool. That's New York Monomore. Not Monomy. but the similar. But yeah, it gets a very high recommendation for
yes.
me.
Yes.
All right. So up next is, oh boy, this is the book of the week for me, though.
Hell one of the greatest. Yes. This is one of the greatest things ever created.
Yeah. I think that's fair. This is Rio, The Complete Saga by Doug Wildey. Rio is shoot first, ask questions later kind of cowboy guy. And Doug Wildey did, what, three published stories this has?
Yeah.
And two unpublished stories also collected in here that have never been collected before.
Yeah, which is...
Also created Johnny Quest.
Yep. He also was kind of the main guy on the... Who was it? The Outlaw Kid? Was that the big one he did for him?
He did a bunch of DC Western books.
Yeah, he did DC
and Marvel
stuff.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, so he's like one of the big guys back in the 40s and 50s before Marvel, like when it was still Atlas and worked for DC. He's just one of those guys who did everything. Then, like Nick said, he went into animation. He tried to direct movies. He did everything.
It's crazy that each of these stories are actually written at like completely different times. Like,
but you can see it. The art style definitely changes
right.
a lot.
Because the last one's in the 90s, right?
Yeah, and you can tell that he's getting kind of
starting
old
to lose
it
a little.
And,
yeah,
but the first one is done in a very traditional like. Pen and ink,
yeah.
zip tone. It has a very sort of Alex Toth look to it.
Yeah.
And the story in that one's great.
Yeah, the story in this one is... God, I never actually read any Rio before this, and I instantly, after like the first page, I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Rio's like, in the beginning, he's a bounty hunter who has been offered... a bounty hunter. He's like an outlaw, and he's been offered immunity... By Ulysses S. Grant, if he works for him, you know, because he's such an awesome gunfighter and
yeah.
he's just so awesome that, you know, he can get the job done. So he hires him to go to this town, and it's weird because there's like corruption going on where there's this railroad where people are using it to just shoot buffalo out the side of
right,
it.
Like sport trips on the train.
And they're like killing off all the buffalo and they're just leaving the meat and just taking the hides, and like the Native American population is starting to die off because they don't have food and they're like really angry about it. And so they sent him basically to stop it. But like there's like a huge conspiracy and it's like pretty big, and he has trouble trying to stop it, and he gets framed for murder and all sorts of crazy stuff happens. And then he ends up in Mexico and it's awesome.
Yeah,
but there's
that's
like
the longest one.
There's
in
really here. Cool shootouts in this, and just he's just so awesome. He's like Clint Eastwood in like anything.
Yeah, he's amazing in the second story too. Is like he comes into this small town where basically there's no violence, and they hire him on to be the sheriff. But it ends up that the town, there's no violence there because Jesse James is like hiding out there,
yeah.
and he's like threatening every outlaw that comes through town.
Yeah.
And once everybody figures that out, it's like all bets are off, and it turns into
all these bounty hunters show up, and like
yeah, it turns into like the craziest shootout. And it's interesting because that story has like a much more painted style.
Yeah,
like he may have done pen and ink to start off with, but it looks like he painted over it with maybe pastels or acrylics or something like that. And
yeah, I don't know if we mentioned, but these are actually like scans of his art.
Yeah, so they describe it in the beginning that this is, they're trying to do it like an art book more than a perfect reproduction. So like Nick said, these are from the original. So on pages, like they did such a good reproducing these, you can see like the early pencil marks before he inked stuff in. You can see the blue pencil lines that would not
white
be
out.
Reproduced when they like photocopied these to print them. It's
there's one word balloon
amazing.
Where you can see not just the piece of paper that he put over top of the words, but where the tape where he taped it down as well.
Yeah, and you get into the back of this, like the unpublished stories, like the very final one in here, he didn't even finish. He was working on it when he died, and it's like so, like all the dialogue's penciled in, but it's not even ink. Some pages he's completely drawn and colored it. Others it's just like the lightest of like sketches in pencil.
And some is just like word balloons with right. no drawings.
Yeah.
but it's his art's beautiful, and
it's so beautiful.
But the stories are just great too. I mean, it's such a cool book.
Yeah, if you like westerns, this is like one of the best western comics I've ever read.
Yeah, I did some research on it, and like I said, when he was doing the Outlaw Kid from Marvel, he was just drawing it, and like he went back and read them, and he's like, these are even worse written than I remember. And like, of course, you know, whatever the editor at the time was like, you just put Kid in the title, and it'll sell as a western. So he had like Two Gun Kid and Rawhide Kid and all
yeah.
that. So
well, he worked
Outlaw
a lot
Kid.
With. What's his face? It's Steve Canyon.
Milton Caniff.
Oh, yeah. Caniff. He, like, apparently
he actually drew
for him some.
Like,
yeah.
a month or so worth of Steve Canyon.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
amazing.
But his thing for this was, he's like, I could write better than this. I want to do a good Western. And so he did this all himself.
And the early stuff was in Epic Illustrated, like in the early 80s. And then
all over the place, yeah.
Yeah. yeah, but definitely, I mean, yeah, if you're interested in Westerns, definitely check out this book.
If you're interested in awesome art.
I mean, yeah. I love like the like how it's scanned from the originals. It reminds me a lot of that Al Williamson Flash Gordon book that came out that is also so amazing.
Yeah.
I read this today while listening to the soundtrack to the video game Red Dead Redemption.
And
it definitely added to the feel. Yeah. So if you can listen to like some old spaghetti Western music or something too, it definitely helps out. But yeah.
The third story in this, he ends up in Tombstone after the showdown at the OK Corral. Like, they tie in some awesome Western legend stuff. So
it's cool. It's so cool.
Yeah, there are a lot of references to Deadwood as well. And I was like, I need to read a book about like the historical Deadwood because I just really know the TV show and I love it. But our highest recommendation.
Indeed.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So that's it for reviews for this week.
Wow.
Six things?
Yep.
Yeah. That's all right, though. I mean, we're kind of cutting out, you know, if you listen to the older episodes, there were a lot of times where we're like, well, this is just okay. And we're just trying to kind of cut that stuff out.
Well, there also just wasn't a lot of new things to review this week.
That's true. So. But I mean, like last week, we didn't review Kiss number one because it's true. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
But so I think now is the time on the show where we talk about what else we've been reading.
X-Men back.
Yeah,
pressure.
I need to get a different song for that.
That's
one.
A great
but
song,
all right, let's do this. Jared, what else did you read this week?
I went back and read a couple of classics. A classic and a neo-classic. I finally read the Catwoman Volume 1 trade of the current series, which you may remember we reviewed number 1 way back last September-ish. Yeah, September. I liked it. I really did.
Whoa.
I remember reading those first two issues and it definitely was not for me. Like, well, you said you kind of recognize it as a sexist
it's not something you show any woman and expect to not, you know.
Yeah, I remember it being pretty lascivious.
It is, but like his art's so good.
Guillaume Arch is
a
really
such
good
a great artist.
Yeah.
And so it's like that kind of like pulpy B-level fun. It's like, you know, Faster Pussycat Kill. You're not watching that to like advance the feminist movement. You're just like, this is some crazy thing by some guys. And Judd Winnick's writing is actually pretty good for it. So it was fun.
That sex scene, though. Oh, my
yeah.
God.
That was a little... Yeah, but if you just rolled with it and you're like, all right, whatever. Because like a big theme of it is that like she's like, so there's this Batman guy and we're hooking up all the time and I don't know anything about him, but you know we've got this weird connect. You know, it's always been the Batman Catwoman thing that just haven't dealt with. So they did more of that. But I also read The Infinity Gauntlet. Which I realized I'd never read. So, spoiler alert, there's some connection to the Infinity Gauntlet in Avengers, the movie, which I never read because when it came out was right when I was a kid getting into comics and like I'd missed it on the shelves. So like every issue of it would be like bagged and boarded for like $12.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, you know, a $2.50 comic. And I'm like, I can't afford this. But I remember the glove with all the cool gems.
But amazing.
It was pretty crazy. Like, it was such a big, epic story for Marvel. It's like, at a certain point, the heroes don't even matter because it's like, well, now the Celestials have shown up. Oh, and Galactus is punching someone. You know, it's just like, it's gone so beyond anything that Captain America can do.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
But yeah, it was pretty fun. It was definitely that big scale Marvel stuff, which
I love. Jim Starlin too.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, his that old cosmic stuff, like Death of Captain Marvel and all that Warlock stuff. I love all that stuff.
Yeah, the beginning of the dialogue, or not the dialogue, the writing was a little like too much box heavy, but after that, it got pretty good. So,
what about you, Nick? What have you been reading?
I read the new issue of Glory today, and it's awesome. You guys need to catch up on Glory because it's incredible. This issue is an epic battle, like for an island with like. An army of monsters and Glory tearing their eyes out with her teeth and like it's awesome. It's so cool. And what else did I read this week?
You've been going on about Avengers versus X-Men number 6.
Yes. Avengers versus X-Men number 6 came out this weekend. No matter what you've been thinking about the crossover, this issue is it's awesome. It's like one of the best event issues I've read in a long time. And there's really actually very little action in it, but it's such a good character piece, and I don't know. There's a lot of cool things happening in it, and like it took a turn that I did not think was going to happen.
Yeah.
And other than that, I also read, like, Kevin, what did you read? I read the same thing you read.
Yeah,
too.
We all read Saga number 4.
Oh, yes. My goodness.
Yes. That saga's moving along nicely
right
now.
That ramped up some interesting content.
There was some pretty explicit stuff going on in the new issue Saga. But no, it's great. I mean, I don't want to ruin the storyline too much, but the character of the nanny that they introduced in the last issue is...
Yeah, she's great.
She's great, and one of these bounty hunters that's going after him just stops off at, like, a sex planet. yeah, basically, and that it's those two stories going on at the same time, and it's really well done.
It's awesome.
And the big kind of second Wonder Woman storyline just wrapped up, and ending was fantastic.
It's I gotta catch up on that.
Yeah, it's so good. It's like involves Ares guns that you use to shoot people to make you fall in love with them, and like Hades is wants Wonder Woman to marry him, but first she has to prove that she's loyal by like wrapping the lasso of truth around her when she tells. Yeah, it's so good. A lot That's of the new great. Characters they've introduced in there too are fantastic.
Yeah, redesigns for all the gods are incredible. Yeah.
And I've heard a couple of people say they don't like Tony Akin's art and they can't read the book when Cliff Chang's not drawing it.
Right. But That's crazy.
But I think Tony Akin's art is fantastic.
It may even be better. I really like it.
I think that sometimes when I'm reading it, but I wasn't going to actually say it. But it's got a different style. It's a little looser, and it just
reminds me of Nick Bradshaw from like Wolverine.
Yeah, I could I could definitely see that. Yeah, and there's a panel in here where Hades sort of shows his true form. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But that's you know, I read a bunch of other stuff too, but those were the two that really stuck out for me.
So many good comics.
So many good comics all the time.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I just reread The Inkle too. That blew my mind. Yeah. So crazy.
Yeah. I also cut up on Walking Dead too.
Nice. Oh, that's
good. Ramping up to issue 100.
Who is Lucille, you guys?
Oh yeah, that's one of the new teasers out.
Like, who is Lucille? It's like Lucille is coming.
Yeah, what? Lucille is coming in.
Where's this?
Walking Dead number 100. It's like
teaser.
An ad.
Yeah, yeah.
She's probably with the aliens from issue 50.
She probably is. All right, so cool. I guess next time we see everybody, it will be in person, or they'll just be listening to the live show.
I'm being really confused.
All right, cool. Well, we will see you guys next week.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, see ya.